Hello and welcome to podcast where we will be hunting biggest of moose and squirrel. I am host Ivan, and joining me this evening
is your other host Natalia.
We are covering the most red of all sparrows. How much worse is my accent than Jennifer Lawrence?
I thought her Lawrence is pretty accent.
Her Lawrence is pretty accented.
Yeah.
Okay, I can go along with that.
I thought it was okay, or not bad. Did you have a problem with it?
I don't know. I don't know. I just noticed a lot of people were making fun of that, and I don't know. Let's talk about explanation. We're supposed to talk about Wrinkle in Time tonight.
Oh, we didn't see Wrinkle in Time?
No, we did not.
Okay, because I was going to say they took a huge divergence from the book.
Lots of liberties.
Yeah, lots of liberties. Certainly a different timeline.
I can't explain it. I have bought tickets in advance at this movie theater dozens of times over the last 3 years, and I've never had an issue where I show up and they have no record of me buying the tickets. And I don't know whether I didn't complete the transaction because I got distracted or what, but we got there, and unfortunately, Wrinkle in Time was sold out, the advanced showing of it. Red Sparrow was at 7:15. We were supposed to do that last week until this stuff with my granddad happened. So we decided to call an audible and do Red Sparrow a week late. This was directed by Francis Lawrence, who has directed a couple things I've liked and some other things I'm kind of I directed Constantine, which I quite liked. Ooh. I Am Legend, which I also liked.
Yes.
Water for Elephants, which I'm and then The Hunger Games, which are kind of all over the place. And this project reunites him with Jennifer Lawrence, who also starred and headlined The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
Also Joel Edgerton. Those are the stars. There's lots of other. Jeremy Irons is rushing in it up. Kieran Hines is rushing in it up.
There's another guy, Matthias Schoenberg.
Was that her uncle?
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Who might have been 3 years younger than her?
He is very...
He is very handsome Soviet man.
He is very handsome Soviet man.
Ex-Soviet. We all...
I can't place what he's been in, but I thought he did well as well.
What did you think of this? Because this is a non-spoiler part of the review. What did you think of the movie?
It was... Okay.
Yeah.
It was an okay spy movie to put out months after I got to see Charlize Theron kick almighty ass in Atomic Blonde.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. This movie was okay. Like, I like a good spy film. I like a good spy yarn. I grew up on Tom Clancy. This is essentially Cardinal in the Kremlin with a twist at the end.
Mm-hmm. I thought it looked gorgeous in the sense that it very much could be timeless. This movie could be set in the 70s. This movie could be set right now.
And it is.
Right, exactly. But it's also one of those places in the world that is, I guess, is timeless itself. And
right.
then it's just stuck in its, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
I feel like Russia is just stuck in a place where they're not really going to advance the people much.
All of our Russian fans will be pissed off and hear they say that. What I thought is jarring to something I've been, you know, obviously confronted with for the last year or two, but the Cold War is back on in earnest.
Yeah.
And Hollywood is more than ready to welcome the Russians back into the fold of villainy.
Yeah.
Like the Americans before it, this is an interesting thing where... it's like this film I felt was more interesting in concept than execution. Like the idea that there is this secret Russian army of sex men and women ready to ply your cock and your snatch to pry government secrets and compromises out of you, I think is a really, really fascinating like form of warfare.
I don't understand how it still works. If you are a spy, why would you ever engage in a sexual relationship with anyone?
And I guess that's the problem, is this movie is two spies who are essentially getting into each other's pants with their faces, their cards ostensibly face up on the table the whole time, which honestly, is a little bit of a problem because that's fine because, okay, they're two pros and they're playing each other and they're playing like a very high stakes game of poker and they both know they're bluffing. But then they try to make it where there's a little bit of feeling, like genuine feeling at the end. And that and the third act kind of depends on whether you buy the chemistry between Joel and Jennifer. And I did not.
I didn't either. I thought it was more of like a Stockholm syndrome-y type of thing. Like we are both in this we're both in this situation, so we are going to make what we can of it.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to use her own agency to have a relationship with someone, and maybe he's going to do the same thing. Just yeah. happens to be his type because she made herself look that way.
Yeah.
But I thought what was missing, and you put a fine point on it, is that where's the intrigue? Where's uh-huh. the tension?
Uh-huh.
Every time they walk into a room and you think she's going to play it some way, and they just tell each other outright what is happening.
Yeah.
It was bizarre to me.
And I saw...
And
There's like, you know, a classic... Because this shares a lot of structure in a heist movie where things are happening in plain sight and then in the last act they'll show you what was going on. I saw every single thing that I was supposed to see, but I still didn't really know where it was going. And to me, it felt closer to, like, you know, one of my personal pet peeve films.
Usual Suspects?
The Usual Suspects. It felt more The Usual Suspects than it did, like, an Ocean's 11 or a Sixth Sense, where the twist immediately felt earned. This one felt, I don't know, just a little, somewhat, maybe it's too pedestrian, maybe it was a little too... a filmmaker playing the cards too close to its vest, but it made a good, there was good excuses for that because there's no time in this movie could Jennifer Lawrence's character really trust anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I guess, the really interesting thing is when you are like double agent between the Russians and the Americans, there's really, you know, your side is more than happy to torture you. The other side's going to be probably more than happy to torture you and kill you. Like, you really are between a rock and a hard place. And I felt some of that, like, hopelessness throughout the film, but mm-hmm. not enough to really, like after everything was said and done, I'm like, huh, I'm not sure that was worth all the fuss. Like, there's like nothing ever really came to a head. There was nothing that made me feel like super satisfying on the payoff and super absorbed when I was. It's a very, reminded me a lot of The Americans. It's lurid, it's unpleasant to watch a lot of times, and it's never quite builds up to anything that is worth all that.
Right. It's gritty and it's cold.
Yeah.
And
I understand that's not like...
Which I guess, yeah.
That's not a mainstream view of the Americans. That's my view of the Americans. But that's how I felt when I was watching this. Like, this is an ugly thing to watch. And I don't feel like I'm learning anything new about the human condition or whatever.
Right. So like I said, it's a lot like Atomic Blonde.
Mm.
Except Atomic Blonde is a lot more neon and
excitement. Atomic Blonde was more fun to watch, for sure.
Right.
But it also, curiously, didn't really get the hooks in.
Oh, well, we differ in opinion about that.
All right.
We're not here to talk about Atomic Blonde.
anyway, so do you have anything more you want to talk about non-spoilery?
I have lots of spoilery things to say.
Okay, me too.
But first...
let's talk about the trailers,
yeah.
as our want. This is the first time for you seeing a lot of these, I think.
Yes.
Let's start with the new Deadpool trailer that I'm going to talk unfinished... I'm going to call it the unfinished Cable Arm trailer, if you've seen that. The Toy Story homage trailer.
It's really good.
I like it.
It's very funny.
I mean, Deadpool lives and dies by the details. And I thought it was very cute that Deadpool's frustrated by them not having the effects work done with Cable. So he stages it like Andy does his little toys in Toy Story. And Deadpool comes up and he's dressed like... Sheriff Woody, and the thing that was really cool is when he dropped the toys at the end when they had the trailer finished, you see the little Cable and Deadpool's action figures. They have Wade written in Sharpie on the bottom of their foot, just like Andy from Toy Story.
Yeah.
And that's the shit that makes Deadpool work, and it seems like, you know, I was worried that the second Deadpool could possibly live up to, like, the surprise and kind of, like, fun of the first one. But, boy, it seems like it's going to.
Mm-hmm.
Between this and the Bob Ross trailer, I feel like the movie's in good hands.
Agreed.
Do you want to say anything in particular about the trailer?
About the trailer? No.
How about we talk about Coming Out?
Okay.
Jim and I, when we first saw a teaser of this movie, our initial response was, 2018? Why do we need another young man in high school coming out? But then I thought the trailer made a good case for why that still, you know, that's still an issue and something that's still relevant. This expanded trailer felt so aggressively young adult that I kind of like, and maybe that's exactly, I'm sure, the market that this thing should be aimed for, because...
Right, I mean, it's aimed for teenage boys sitting in the audience watching in the Midwest.
Yeah.
In places where maybe it's not as easy to do that.
Yeah.
To feel okay about it.
I don't think it's just the Midwest, because, like, there's... we act like there's blue parts of America and red parts of America, but reality...
When I say the Midwest, I just mean everything in the middle that's not New York and California.
But even then, I feel like there's still people, like it must... there are still some conservative folks living in New York City. There are conservative forks
are the real problem.
And spoons in L.A. from hell to breakfast.
Well, I think you're protesting a little bit too much there.
Maybe. I don't have any firsthand knowledge. I've lived in the Midwest all my whole life, and I, like I said, it's this movie's not for me. It does seem like it's pretty funny, and
maybe the movie is for adults who have teenage children who...
That's not a bad take.
I mean, here's the thing, is teenagers coming into their sexuality is a complicated thing, even if you're not gay or trans or something like that. So maybe it's for women who, men and women who like seeing Josh Duhamel and Jennifer Gardner play parents, identify with those people and find a way to support their children.
You see,
better.
I was thinking from a different angle, like, say you're a 50 year old gay man, and you remember like how scary it was to come out, even if you like, so it's like an older audience might identify with it, a younger audience and a more conservative family might identify with it. But it's, you know, it's coming out, like if you're an atheist and your parents are devout religious, like anything that's really scary, coming out is different in high school is always going to be a scary thing. I think it's a resonant. It's just, it's like a little too young adult for me.
I mean, the other thing is, I feel like I watched the entire movie in that trailer.
Yes.
I hate this new thing that's happening.
This is getting, this trailer shit is getting worse and worse. Let's move on to Solo. What did you think? You have not seen this trailer before, no?
I have not seen the trailer before. And my thoughts after the trailer was over was, well, that's a shame.
Oh wow, you're already all out
so
on it.
I was so excited about Donald. Is it Donald? I always get them confused.
Donald Glover
as Han Solo. And I still kind of am.
You mean as Lando Calrissian?
Oh, yeah, my bad.
Okay.
It's Lando.
My God, can you imagine what the internet would do if they cast a black man as young Han Solo?
Oh my God.
If like fucking they threw a fit about Spider-Man.
Right, exactly. Especially this young black man.
It's not too late. It's not too late to shelve this project, start all over
just
Donald.
Just flip him over.
Yeah.
Flip him around. I don't like
Alden
this
Aaron Reich.
I don't like him.
I thought when he smiles, he's got a pretty good lopsided Han Solo smile.
But you know, it's a movie about Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
And the trailer material featured exactly two lines and a lopsided smile.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best you've got. We got more previews of Lando and whoever Emilia Clarke's character is going to be than we did him. So do you think they're trying to save the suspense because they're holding on to a real good performance? Or do you think that they're just, I don't know.
I mean, this production is just fraught. It's been nothing but bad things have come out about this movie. It's now is finally helmed by Ron Howard, who I'm sure is going to do a perfectly adequate job of directing this thing. It annoys me that I'm going to have to forget all the lore I know about Han Solo to enjoy this movie. Like, it's really a bummer.
Is that going to be a bold movie?
I have no doubt, but I honestly, this movie is going to kind of determine whether Star Wars is going to be a first run kind of thing for me or whether I'm going to start waiting for it to be on video. I mean, I'm going to watch the end of the trilogy, but if Solo is disappointment, and I kind of expect it will be, which might be a stealth pleasant surprise. I'm so low in my feelings about it. But if it's a bomb and episode 9 is as big a mess as episode 8, I cannot believe I'm saying this, but I think I might just be cool with Star Wars being on Netflix or, you know, I'll just catch. I don't need to stand in line and go out in the opening night hoopla and, you know,
right.
feel sad.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
I
10 days.
Am not super excited about seeing Tomb Raider.
Why don't you like Tomb Raider?
I just.
Why
I
do
don't...
you hate women?
No, it's not. That's not. Well, there's lots of
it's
reasons.
International Women's Day.
It's and I'm shitting on Tomb Raider. I don't know. Like, I saw an awesome female-oriented film last week. It was called Annihilation.
You only saw one?
And
no You've
one,
only seen
and,
one
and
awesome?
No one else, no one else, no one else in America saw it. Everyone's going to go see this probably dumb
But it's got Walton video. Goggins.
I like Walton Goggins and
Why
I like
are you
video
games. It's dumb?
Because I've never seen a good video game movie ever. All right. Ever.
All right.
If this is the first one, then it will be kind of like the first Fox X-Men. Like, okay, this will be on the map that a video game or movie can be kind of good.
So what makes a video game movie good, in your opinion? Because
It's fun to watch as a movie.
You've never seen a fun-to-watch video game adaptation
Have
of a
you?
Movie? Yeah, all of them.
Like Resident Evil?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I mean... Okay, I guess, but it's kind of those are kind of trash movies, though, right?
Yeah, that's what's so fun about it.
So you think the Tomb Raider is
going
to be a trash
there,
film?
I'm not going there for a well put together script and excellent direction. I'm going there so I can relive playing the Lara Croft or the Tomb Raider game.
Yeah,
which it looks like it is exactly that.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and
the...
just as much fun as I had watching the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raiders, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, the art direction looked like they just played the video game and took pictures, took screenshots of it.
Yeah, I think I actually exclaimed out loud when she got her little hook thing, her climbing hook. Mm-hmm.
Her, you did.
Her grappling hook, whatever it's called.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I'm
all about it.
It's called her Tomb Raider.
Well, that'll it's
patent pended.
That'll be a Cecily movie, and I will enjoy it all by myself.
You should. You should get a posse of video game women to go and give it the full treatment.
No, I said a Cecily movie where I go all by myself.
Solo? Cecily Solo? Wow. Can we talk about Truth or Dare, the horror movie about I don't know. This looks dumb. Yeah, no.
Just skip it.
Yep. And that is the trailers we saw tonight at the movies. Okay, Natasha, now we do the spoiler-oo.
In Soviet Russia, spoil you.
Your Yankoff needs some work there. There's something about the structure that you're not quite nailing.
Are
Similar
you
to this
actually
movie.
Giving me notes on my Russian accent,
yeah,
Boris?
Yeah, I am. Okay, so I saw a lot of people making fun of Jennifer Lawson's accent.
Lawrence.
I grew up with Sean Connery being a Russian sub commander.
Okay, that's...
And not doing a damn thing different than just doing a Sean Connery accent. So I guess I don't know what the fuss is. I just thought the movie was a C-plus effort, and that's the only criticism I have. It's just average. It's aggressively average.
Agreed. While they were doing their, you know, when we figured out that they were just going to be open books with each other from the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, you're an American agent. Yes, and I'm a Russian agent. There's no reason I should trust you, and there's no reason I should trust you.
But here are some breadcrumbs that you can follow in order to figure out who I am.
Uh-huh.
But don't worry, if you stop me long enough, I'm just going to tell you anyway.
Yeah.
I thought that was bizarre. And then you figure out that we should have been seeing the breadcrumb she's leaving from the very beginning, like giving away her true identity because she knew that it wouldn't work to try to seduce him as a stranger.
Yeah.
And
but why
for
didn't
her
she?
To pick up the glass in his apartment the next day and open that bank account, things like that.
Right.
That by the very end, I think that the twist was so predictable that it wasn't a twist anymore.
Well, the only twist is that, because like when Jeremy Irons came and said, I'm the American spy and what you need to do is give me up. And then, you know, this actually happened in real life.
Yeah.
A Russian agent, revealed his mentor, outed his mentor to get extra trust. And that was like what ended up getting based the Cardinal and the Kremlin on. So they took that setup where like, okay, I'm your stage one booster. You give me up to the Russians and you'll be decorated and then no one will ever suspect you and you can be an even better spy. And they zigged with Jennifer Lawson.
Lawrence.
Why am I saying Jennifer Lawson? Okay. It's like, Law. It's got to be Law. Jennifer Lawrence. J-Law. She's like, I'm way ahead of you. I already got all this compromise on this other guy, my uncle, my creepy uncle. And I've stuck his head in a noose and tightened it. And I'm going to deliver him up to the Americans. So now I still got the one guy and then me. But to what? I don't know to what end, because it's
to the end that the reason he wanted her to take his place within this organization is so that they could take them down from the inside, and that's how she gets that trust.
Right.
Now we've got two agents working.
Right. No, I see why it's better. I'm just saying, like, the movie's got some other muddled things, like, you know, Joel Edgerton at the end, like, you know, is super angry that she gave up his source, or he thought he did, and. You know, and he's like, that's the difference between us and them. We don't give up our people, but we know that the Americans were absolutely going to give up Jeremy Irons, the guy that Joel Edgerton almost sacrificed his career to protect. So, like,
they were going to give him up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. That's why he was so pissed off, because he thought that they were there to pick up Jeremy Irons, and Jeremy Irons is going to get murdered just like her uncle did.
I don't think they intended for anyone to get murdered.
They didn't, but Joel Edgerton, he actually said, you know that you got this guy killed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So whoever was marched out,
that's the other thing I thought was dumb.
Like, the Russians aren't going to fucking sniper somebody in the middle of a diplomatic trade. The reason you don't do that is because no one will ever trust you again.
Right.
That's terrible spycraft.
Yeah.
So, like, I was kind of impressed when they did, and I'm like, huh, I wonder... But then they blew his head off. I'm like, but no, absolutely, the Americans were going to give up Jeremy Irons to boost Jennifer Lawrence into a younger, higher orbit.
I don't think the Americans had anything to do with that at all, really.
I mean, you're right. It's not like Joel Edgerton cooperated with her at all. Jeremy Irons was the one that approached her on the deal, but yeah. The Americans are going to go along with it, absolutely.
Okay.
So I felt like the movie, again, kind of muddied its point by saying that the Americans would absolutely give up somebody for... I mean, they were... The difference is Jeremy Irons was willing to do it, I guess.
Do you feel like Jeremy Irons could have tried a little bit more to appear less as a mole?
I didn't think he looked like a mole at all. Did you think he was the guy from the very beginning?
He had zero Russian accent. No, I didn't. But okay. I did notice early on that Jeremy Irons took a Sean Connery approach later in life.
Yeah.
Where he's like, you know what? I'm just going to do my accent.
I'm just
going to
go with Scar. I'm just going to Scar. Scar was oily and evil, and this guy's oily and evil, and I'm going to play right into that.
Yes.
Be prepared, I say.
How do you think the rest of his night went when he left his front door open and just... You know, got blasted on brandy and smoked his finest cigars.
That's such a cliche. Like, I've seen that. I've seen the evil guy in a robe smoking a cigar and drinking brandy and getting his throat slit from behind in, like, four other movies.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm on wait. And then here's the opera. And even to the opera music, it's going to be the crescendo, the fat lady singing. And then you're going to see
just
one of those Russian dudes, probably one of the guys we saw in the sparrow training earlier. And he's going to garrote him, or he's going to slash his throat. And it didn't happen. I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to do something more clever. But again, I just don't buy the Russians renege. Like, oh, That'd be a shit show.
What do you mean the Russians renege?
The Russians were handing off a political prisoner, and then they shot him, and then the Americans are sitting there, and they're all heavily armed, and they've already said if any funny business happens, we're open fire, and it's like,
right.
Oh,
if
you
stop,
Russians!
If you talk to each other, if you do anything besides walk right past each other, then you're going to get sniped. But they stand there and have a talk and some kisses and
I thought that was
how long did Jeremy Irons sit in that chair waiting for someone to come and kill him before he's like, all right, guess not tonight.
Yeah, maybe he fell asleep in the chair, woke up the next day, he's like, shit.
Whoa,
I left myself wide open for it. I don't get it. I don't know. Stuff I really liked about the movie. I thought the ballerina effects with Jennifer Lawrence.
Just say J-Law.
J-Law. I thought they were really good.
Yeah.
Like, it's uncanny.
Absolutely.
That I guess they just digitally painted her legs to make her look like she was doing the on point.
I think they just put her face on there.
Oh.
Yeah, I think they just digitally put her face there.
Interesting.
Onto that ballerina's body.
J-Law does not have a classical ballerina's body.
No.
So, because I just assumed they, like, yeah, I guess that would be easier to put her face on a ballerina than to, like, just take J-Law's from the thighs up and just do something. Because I was thinking, like, you know, how would they do that? They just kind of follow the camera and be like, all right, now hop. All right, now hop. All right, now hop. And she's just wearing a green leotard and they just bear. So, okay, that makes sense.
Did you watch any, or did you read any about the special effects they use in the new Blade Runner movie to do that? Is this a spoiler? To do that, this two women melding scene?
Oh, yeah.
Did you read any about how they did that?
I did, but I don't see how it applies to this.
It was really eye-opening for me. I guess that scene took like a year to make because they did just recreate each other's movements exactly.
Right.
Over and over again. So, right.
And it's weird because it can't be perfect. Because if it's perfect, then it doesn't look like an effect.
Right.
And if it's too off, then it's jarring and distracting.
Right,
so I imagine
exactly.
That did take a lot of finesse. But that was pretty cool. Also, a bit, you know, I thought the stuff about her sparrow training was, like, you know, pretty good for that kind of thing.
I did not.
Really?
I don't see what she got out of it besides a lot of rape.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When she kicked that guy's ass in the shower, where was the training?
Yeah.
We saw her run outside and then see people being trained to shoot. Where was that training in her?
Yeah.
And they just trained her to take
She also went from a ballerina to someone who could take special forces Russian in combat and then also defeat one in knife combat. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe there wasn't enough like feeling like she was being transformed into some kind of weapon.
Right.
Because ultimately she wasn't really. She didn't. I felt like that was the whole thing in the movie. She stayed true to her strong core and she proved her uncle right that yes, I am just like you, except for I'm not a fucking asshole, I guess. But I can read people a mile away and I can stay one step ahead of them and all that. But
right. And her, like, the matron of the Schoolhouse Rock, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. Sparrow School.
Said, well, it's only been 3 months and I don't think you're ready, but mostly because I haven't taught you a damn thing.
yeah. I mean, I guess it would have maybe been better if, like, we had a 2 years later montage and she just, like, we come back and Jennifer Lawrence is just looking fucking hard.
Yeah.
But then that wouldn't work because of the Joel Edgerton setup where they're, you know, they got this manhunt for this Russian and all this other stuff. Yeah, I don't know. I said, I thought the tradecraft, because that's what I think that's what people read in spy novels and watch spy movies for, is just to see kind of the really inventive ways to fool people and to lie and to do these convincing, like the codes and all that stuff is super cool. And I thought there was a lot of really interesting spy craft in the beginning where he's getting these one-time keys and he's twirling them around his pin to decode them and... he's doing these like dead drops with the guy, and then like progressively I felt like the tradecraft got more and more just like, okay, well, we're just going to handcuff someone to a chair and beat him, or we're going to peel skin off of him, or we're going to do this or that, and the cleverness was completely abandoned by the third act.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing felt, like I said, there was no emotional connection because none of these people should emotionally connect, and when they did finally emotionally connect, it felt not organic. None of the sex scenes were sex. I mean, they're the opposite of sexy, honestly.
Right, exactly.
Which, like, again,
even,
is the point.
Even
but
that consensual sex.
Yeah, like when she finally mounts Joel's character and like grinds on him for 30 seconds. Like, what was that about? Was that just about her?
She was getting herself off.
Yeah.
Which I don't know.
So you were surprised that that still works. I think I don't think it would work against a trained intelligence agent, but absolutely any kind of agent that's trained in some kind of persuasive, seductive thing would just cut a wide swath through Congress and, if you know, military. Like, I think
those
that,
things are different. I'm saying spy versus spy.
Yeah no,
how
I get
does
it.
That work?
No, I think that's wildly implausible and not very well handled. I was waiting to see how they were going to just sell the insane chemistry or just like what kind of situation we're going to get to. I would believe that they would have this kind of will they won't they relationship, and they just didn't do it. But I thought you were saying that you thought that the idea that there'd be like these sexy agents that use this to get information, like, because it's their target wouldn't be like James Bond. Their target would be the chief of staff or a junior senator of that was on the House Intelligence Committee or something.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's going to work 100% of the time. All right. 99.
Plus, they got like they got the penis pussy power. They got the power of the purse. They got the, you know, they can get you in uncomfortable situations and then exploit you. And I mean, that's the other thing is like when Jennifer they kept on dangling in front of J-Law the idea that she could get out of this predicament. And I'm like, no, you won't. Because once they get you to compromise it, every compromise going forward will be easier and easier.
Right.
Like you did it once for this argument. You're going to now you're just in deeper.
Right.
So how are you ever going to say no? And if you ever say no, we put a bullet in your head and we kill your mom, too. Like, you're fucked. We own you.
Right. And it seems like she's set up to stay there forever now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she seems comfortable at home in bed with her mom.
Yeah, no, she's going to be an asset for America, I suppose.
So she was wearing, like, a military uniform and was being decorated mm-hmm. at the end.
Yep. While Jeremy Irons looked on How and said, I was prepared.
How is that possible?
What do you mean?
She wasn't a military before that.
No, I think if you're a Sparrow, you're some kind of, like, rank officer. Like, okay. Most CIA agents are some sort of officer.
I mean, CIA agents usually start in the military.
Do they?
Yeah.
Huh.
A lot of those types do.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and read by Tom Clancy to see what they're... Because I felt like some of them were law enforcement. A lot of them were, like, law enforcement.
Well, yeah, she wasn't any of those things either.
Yeah, you're right. She's a ballerina. She's right.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like J-Lo. She was in the... What were they, Around the Way Girls? What was the... In Living Color? B-Girls? And then one of them broke her leg and, like, yeah. Ooh, that was gruesome, too.
Never saw any of those.
No, I'm talking. I was making a joke that there is an American version of Red Sparrows starring J-Lo, who was actually she was on the dance team on the show In Living Color.
Okay.
And because they didn't have like a house band, they had like a house DJ, and these girls would come out and dance like before and after commercial breaks. Okay. And like now it's like, you know, I've just explained this joke. Is
tell me more
flat.
About In Living Color.
Well, it had a bunch of the Wayans on it, and a guy of Jim Carrey his start.
Interesting.
And what else? That's about it. That's all I can remember.
Huh. But yeah, her leg getting broke was gruesome.
Yeah.
And some of those slash wounds she took, like she's going to have crazy scars forever.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was like, I don't know, I mean, I don't, did this, if I guess I'm getting to the point where I want to see something new, and this felt like, I mean, there is definitely a market that every 10 to 15 years, essentially, every generation comes of age, you can do this type of movie, and it'll be the first one of that type that they see, and whether you're impressed by it or not, I guess, is how much of this crap you've seen before. And I've just seen a lot of this stuff. And it's this uncomfortable, it's not like super high accuracy drama, Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy. It's not
That's
quite James Bond or Jason Bourne or Atomic Blonde where it's just more fun. It's like in this uncanny valley where it wants to be Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy. But it's got too much of the other DNA, the lurid DNA in it, and I don't know. I felt like it was a woman without a country, much like J-Law.
You do get to see J-Law pretty naked a lot of times.
Did you see in any interviews she had where she said that it was her choice to be naked in the movie, and this like kind of powerful scene she had being nude, like she felt like it gave her some of her agency back that she felt like she lost when her iPhone was hacked? And they released the nudes on the internet. Did you see any of the stuff that was, or the interview she was talking about that?
I did not.
Because I was just seeing what you thought.
I don't know. It seemed like she felt good about it.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I don't think, what is his name? Michael Lawrence held a... Francis Lawrence. Are they related?
Francis Lawrence. Who's Michael Lawrence?
I don't know. Francis Lawrence is the director.
Okay.
I was trying to remember his name.
Oh, yes.
Uncle, what are you making? Why are you making me do this Russian spy movie?
Yeah. I made the joke before the podcast.
I did all the Hunger Games for you.
Yeah, he did this movie just so he could finally get that Hunger Games payoff and see her naked.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just surprised by how much like vagina there was.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see. I mean, there was definitely the implication a flashed vagina here and there, but I actually did not see any of J-Law's vagina.
Yeah. But that was enough, I think.
Okay. the hint?
Yeah, because you, I mean, yeah, usually with nudity in movies, it's either like mm-hmm. wearing underwear mm-hmm. and there's attempted rape and then mm-hmm. there's, yeah, just seeing a lot.
Yeah, there is just a lot of actual rape and yeah. almost rape and yeah. attempted rape, just tons.
Yeah.
Tons. I could see that being very, and that's the other thing is like, there is so much of that you kind of like, what is it all, you know, is it all worth it? I always think that when I'm watching a scene that's depicting something that kind of uncomfortable and gritty and real, it's like, okay, they're lifting some pretty heavy weight to what end? And I felt like there wasn't much of an end to this movie.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, to try to wring some emotion out of what we're supposed to be feeling for J-Law. And that feels like really cliched at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to feel like bad for a female character. So I know, let's rape her.
Yeah, exactly. Let's kill a man while we're doing it on top of her.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Cover her
just so she's
blood.
Just cuffed. She's underneath this guy who's probably still inside her. And now he's spraying blood all over. Just make it the most horrific thing possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
What did you think of that Deus Ex torturer? What is that guy's name? The redhead?
The Russian torture guy.
Yeah, the guy who at the last minute came and killed that guy.
The motorcycle
and then,
guy, yeah. I don't know.
Like, he showed up to kill Marta conveniently.
It's like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to watch Joel Edgerton scream and get tortured for 10 minutes, and the outcome of this is preordained.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like the movie was like, we've got to torture him for 10 minutes, or people are going to just think it's like, oh, she's just going to flip right away.
Yeah.
I never stopped thinking that, so it felt tedious. It's kind of like Theon's torture arc in Game of Thrones.
Right.
Like, okay, do I need 5 episodes of this? Like, people are either going to believe, this Lawrence guy was directing and he's like, you know what? I'm really going to have people are going to like, oh, this is going to be, right away. She's going to save him. And then like, oh, she keeps getting tortured and more stuff gets peeled off of him. People are going to start going the other way. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because I guess he directed Jennifer Lawrence to give it all away at the very beginning of that scene when she's calling for Joel Edgerton and he won't respond. And then when he sees him getting strangled by that dude, like the look on her face is like immediately recognizable as, oh shit, what do I do to save this guy? And then like the steel curtain snaps over her face. But like, you shouldn't have played it that way.
Yeah.
But the thing is we know. The movie weirdly doesn't let us see everything that Jennifer Lawrence is doing, but it plays exactly what she's thinking and feeling with an open book. And like, it's, if they're both mysterious, that's interesting. But if like she was being very close as far as her acting and not giving us anything, but we saw that she was laying this case against her uncle,
right?
It'd be just as ridiculous from a different direction. I feel like that's a cardinal sin of the movie. They should have been much more up in the air about what Jennifer Lawrence thought about, I guess, Russia and her experience and her patriotism and like maybe a whole. Now you're going back to the setup of her being a ballerina. Like, at no point did any of this feel believable. Like, it felt stupid that the Russians were sending her out on this very important mission. It felt dumb that her uncle was co-signing it. It felt dumb that they gave her a second chance after they caught her collaborating with the Americans. Like,
right.
I can't believe she talked her way out of her 3-month torture session.
I don't understand.
And be like, no, no, you remember, uncle, you told me to sacrifice anything. And I like, what? Get the fuck out of here. No way. No way you talk yourself out of that.
Yeah.
But it worked, I guess.
I don't at any point understand what motivates her. You know, I know
her
that
mom. That's the one.
Okay,
storyline.
I was gonna say that.
Yeah.
You know, it's once she breaks her leg and doesn't have a means to provide for the family, it's her mom that they're holding over her.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, what motivated her? She didn't seem, you know, she didn't have any relationships outside of taking care of her mom and then dancing and coming home by 10. To take care of her mom and go to sleep.
I think that was her. I feel like that.
That's not motivation.
Really? taking care of your mom after, like, as a year, right? I mean, we need to know more about her dad, and we need to know more about her family.
I need to know where she goes in the future from now.
Right.
You know, now that she's got her mom safe, what does her future look like?
I mean, I guess Red Sparrow 2 would be her and Jeremy Irons fucking over the Russians even more. Because that's like, she's got a long career of being a double agent ahead of her.
Does she?
Yeah, I think. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, I guess that's not what she wanted, but that's, I think, the point of the Jeremy Irons speech is that, like, you know, we both woke up to the fact that our country are a bunch of dickbags, and we're trying now, even though this is not what we wanted, we are now trying to hurt them and bring them down.
That doesn't feel like I don't know. That's a purpose, but I don't feel like that's, you know, a reason to live.
Well, you think that Jennifer Lawrence got out at the end?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying I don't understand why she continues to do anything anymore.
I think she wants to hurt the Russians. That's like, you know, she's now an idol. And there's also that really weird stuff with Mary Louise Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Where she was in there, like, that character, who is a believable mark for, like, that's about what a sparrow would try to aspire to take down. And she's drunk, and she's saying, I just want you to know that I'm not some ideological hippie or anti-war person. I just want to get paid, kind of, like, it's a very weird and broad kind of, like, performance.
Yeah, I feel like it's an appropriate American senator's chief of staff.
I don't know why she was drunk. I don't know why she was, like, I don't know. It was a weird scene. I don't know why she believed, like, there's so many, like, that's the thing. I kept on expecting the characters to see how many red flags were in any given scene, and then, like, fuck this, we're out. But at no point did someone say, you know what, awful lot of red flags in this room.
Right.
I don't feel good about this. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
I guess she's that greedy, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Jennifer Lawrence is the character marked the, what do you call the guy? I want to call him Secret Service, but just like a mini spy. You know, the person that was planted in the restaurant bar waiting and watching.
Uh-huh.
And he was the guy who made the phone call at the end after she got hit by the truck. And all the people outside. I don't understand why they went through with it. I mean, once her boss showed up, why did you let him in the room? Shouldn't he already know what you're doing?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
That's right. She had...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She was playing it to where it would look good for both sides.
Right, exactly.
Like I said, some of that scene was kind of clever, but then, like, Mary Louise Parker comes and kind of bumblefucks her way through it, and I'm like, what is going on?
No, I thought that was totally believable. This is a woman who's struggling with paying her way through her daughter's college, and is also, you know, enjoying her time abroad with other broads.
Mm-hmm.
And getting drunk to absolve her conscience, you know, makes, once you get drunk, it makes it a lot easier to lift that bag of $250,000.
What else do you want to talk about? Spoilery.
That's it.
I think so for me too. Red Sparrow. Sorry we didn't, we did the bait and switch on Wrinkle in Time. We might have something in between this, but I know for a fact we're coming back for March 30th on Ready Player One. Thanks for listening to this bald movie. Sorry we didn't make it to Wrinkle in Time. Hopefully I'll have my shit together next time and I won't show up to any more movie. Between Black Panther and this has been, I've had two in a row sold out on me. I've had to, like, change plans at the last minute. I gotta be more of a master of the Cinemark website. Thanks for your support. Hope you enjoyed the review. Talk to you later.
Bye.